3, 2, 1.
Bonjour, mon ami. I am your instructor.
Hello, Internet, and welcome back to another episode of Old Geek, Young Geek, the only podcast on the Internet with an old geek and a young geek. So, let's talk about DLC today. I just felt like talking about some DLC.
But, the good, the bad, the ugly. DLC, yeah. Do they do it right? Is it terrible? What do the letters stand for?
All of that and more will be answered in this episode. But first, let's talk about the news.
Yeah, the news. Sad news you told me about.
Yes, very sad news, very distressing news that... Yeah, I'm just made upset by this. And that is the cancellation of Silent Hills, which was the project that was going to be headed by Hideo Kojima and Guillermo del Toro. It was also going to be starring Norman Reedus, made famous by the Walking Dead television show. And I was really looking forward to this. I'm not really a fan of horror games of any kind, but Guillermo del Toro has a particular kind of brand of horror that I find intriguing. So I was really looking forward to seeing that. I'm just really made sad by this.
It is a terrible thing. Why would anybody pull this game?
I really don't know.
Del Toro? Kojima? Same game? I mean, come on.
Yeah, that sounds really amazing. It sounds very, it's very intriguing. I really like... I don't say that I would like Hideo Kojima's writing. It's very confusing. But I've never seen it in a Silent Hill horror genre I've really seen, so I really would like to see his take on that. I would like to see Guillermo just make a game. I feel so bad for the guy because he's tried several times in the past, and each time he's had a door slammed in his face.
Many times, because he had that game, was it Unsane or Insane?
I really don't know. I just, you can
look it up. A few years ago that was with THQ, and it was called Insane.
Oh, THQ, that's a horse to bet on.
But, he's had other games, too, that he's announced and has canceled. And I wish I could think of them off the top of my head. This is going back, 10 years.
Yeah, but I remember hearing a lot about... I think this is, the third time that I've heard of it, personally.
Same thing with films. He's always talking about films that he's got coming up. He was going to do a Mountains of Madness adaptation that doesn't seem like it's happening. It might still be kind of happening, but it seems like it's in... development hell, as they say. At least with video games, they're it's canceled. With films, they're could happen. Maybe.
It could happen. I don't know. I feel like that's the case with a lot of video games, too. It might be coming out. I mean, not to bring up something obvious, but Half-Life 3. We all want it. We all know it's coming, but who knows when it's going to come out. But hey, whatever. We just wait patiently.
The other thing about this story that is even more sad is the legacy of the great Silent Hill series. As a longtime horror game fan, the first three, maybe four Silent Hill games are the standard of the entire genre. And since then, this stuff's been all right, but hasn't ever hit that spot that those older games had hit.
So Amnesia is one of the more popular games. It's really started to bring back this sort of resurgence of the horror genre, or rather it's reinvented it, because it focuses more on stealth and evasion of the monsters rather than just beating them clumsily with a lead pipe or something like you would see in Silent Hill.
Right.
So,
well, that
kind of
gets to
that idea.
That sort of gets to the heart, I think, of why horror games are more of a cult thing and not so popular, because people like video games that give them a sort of fantasy of empowerment, where you become this really powerful guy, where horror is a fantasy of disempowerment.
Yeah.
So the two don't usually match up.
Yeah, and by removing, weapons, something as simple as that to a video game, by removing that, that creates a whole different scenario for your playing experience.
But it's something that a lot of people don't like.
Yeah, but you're not supposed to really enjoy the horror experience, I think.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
So. One of the things that the old Silent Hill games did that made them so unique that they didn't keep up as much in the older games is that there was combat, but the combat was intentionally clunky and hard to control and sort of useless, and it took a while to learn as the player. Okay, yes, I have a pipe, and yes, it could potentially kill this monster, but really, I better just run away because I'm not going to get anything except for displeasure out of even trying to fight this thing. So yeah, I'm out. I'm hiding.
Yeah, you might beat it, but you'll be like left with a sliver of health or something of the sort.
Where games like Dead Space, which was really great, the Dead Space games were great and all, but they didn't do that kind of thing. Although they were sometimes they did, but...
My experience with Dead Space was like 2 hours in, and I dropped out just because like it was boring and also gross. I didn't really like Dead Space. It was Resi 4 in space, and none of the quote-unquote dead corpse scares really scared me at all, because I'm like, that is a corpse that is all in one piece. It's going to jump up and get me. I'll just take care of that now.
Yeah, well, that's the interplay or the tension in horror is the difference between something that jumps out and scares you and something that builds very slowly into an atmosphere of dread and terror, which is like what a lot of people go for. Although a lot of people just go, "Oh, that's boring." So I don't know.
I like that kind of horror because I've played a lot more of Amnesia: The Dark Descent than I have of Dead Space and other horror games. And it definitely does accomplish that sort of build-up horror rather than the shock and jump scare horror of something like Dead Space or, say, Five Nights at Freddy's.
Mm-hmm.
What I liked about it is because, like, there was always the looming sense that you were always in danger, but you weren't ever really. I mean, there were no enemies in the area, and if there was, there was only one, and he was patrolling in a set pattern. But, you know, you could avoid him. But yeah, it definitely like built up to that moment when you finally come in contact with any kind of monster. Like, there was always something creeping down the back of your neck, it seemed like.
Right.
So, yeah, that's horror games and Silent Hills.
Do you find horror games as scary as horror movies, or do you find like one more terrifying than the other?
Well, being a person who doesn't really partake in either, I really can't say. I don't know. One thing, like, I think, like, the only horror movie that I've watched may have been Paranormal Activity 2.
Wow, okay. Wow, really?
I'm not one for it, and it was at my friend's house.
I gotta show you some movies, buddy. We gotta see some flicks.
No.
You've never seen, like, The Shining? You've never seen, like...
No, like... I want to see The Shining, though, because that one's more psychological and messes with you more than, like... Okay, see, like, I do you count Alien as a horror
movie? I would count Alien as a horror movie, definitely.
Then I have seen Alien, and I own Alien with pride, because that's a damn good movie.
Yeah, it is. That's a great movie.
But, I don't know, when it comes to something like The Thing, I don't like The Thing, because, like, all the practical effects, there's something about practical effects that makes it more disgusting.
So. No, that movie's terrific, though. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I'll give him credit for that. Right. You know? Like, good on you for making good props and like disgusting scenarios. But like, I'm not having any of it.
Yeah, I can understand. Like, if you don't like that sort of gruesome sort of horror, then you wouldn't like The Thing. But along with the effects, it's also just an excellent movie. I mean, just if it didn't have any effects, it would still be great. Like, it's a fantastic movie.
Okay.
I don't know, that's kind of my thing, is horror movies, so, you know, like,
Okay.
I've seen every one of them. Not every one of them, but quite a few of them.
Yeah, and that can lead to some interesting conversations, because, like, I'm not really well-versed in that, you know, I don't really partake, but I really do want to play, like, some more Amnesia. I just haven't really gotten past a certain point, because, well, I kind of like sleep sometimes.
Amnesia's fun, yeah, I like Amnesia a lot.
I do like Amnesia. Have you ever played Outlast?
I have not played Outlast.
I can't even get 20 minutes into that game. It's like, nope, nope.
Why? What is it about that game? Is it scary? Or is it hard? What is it?
Yes to both. It kind of does the Amnesia thing where, like, you don't have any weapons, but you have a recording camera with night vision, and you have limited batteries, you know, so, like, you'll run out of juice eventually. And, like, The thing about it is that it takes place like in an insane asylum. There are no like monsters or anything, so like it's all just like murderers and terrible people. I'm like, this seems all too real to me.
Awesome. Sounds good. So, I want to check that out.
So I'm not into it because I don't know. I prefer something more fantastical in my horror, I guess you could say, because like that makes it seem less real and less likely to happen to me.
See, that's why you would love a game with that was made by Guillermo del Toro to get it all back, because like that guy, he loves the huge crazy fantasy monsters, man.
I love that because I've seen his movie Pan's Labyrinth. He did that one, right?
Oh yes, he did. Yes,
that's and beautiful. that was a wonderful movie. I really enjoyed that.
And the Hellboy movie and mm-hmm. Well, that guy's great. And, oh my god, that the straight horror movie that he made, is it called The Devil's Backbone?
I'm not sure.
That was like one of his early movies. I gotta make sure that that's him. I'm pretty sure he made the movie The Devil's Backbone. And he produced, again, I'm gonna get horror movie nerd on you. Produced The Orphanage, which is one of the scariest films I've seen in a really long time. The Orphanage is great.
Okay.
If you like horror movies, I
will say that I'll check it out, but I'd be lying.
But you're not gonna. I understand. I get it. Yeah Guillermo del Toro did direct The Devil's Backbone, which is what he originally became known for, and it is a fantastic film.
Okay.
Also, The Babadook. This is not related to Guillermo del Toro at all, but it's on Netflix. Just for anybody that's listening, great horror movie. If you're ever thinking, what movie can I see that's like really scary but also smart? See The Babadook. It's fantastic.
Babadook.
And that is my horror recommendation for the week.
Oh, I've also seen Cabin in the Woods, directed by Joss Whedon.
That one is a meta horror movie. Interesting.
I like
see, that one, I wonder, like, I mean, I guess you still get it because the tropes are so well known.
Yes.
But there were so many things in there that were so just specific to people who love horror movies. Like, that, like, it was just a, like, fan service to the fans. Like, that scene where they walk into the basement before the movie has even started, and they go down in the basement, and there are just a million different implements everywhere, and every horror movie fan realizes that every single one of the things is the beginning of a plot to a different horror movie. Yeah. It's just so awesome.
I caught that, and I really enjoyed the movie. I think it was very well done, and it was scary, and it was also really bloody, and
And the jokes about like Japanese horror movies.
Yes,
that was the best. That's a great movie.
Okay,
well cool. Let's talk DLC.
Let's talk about DLC. So,
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Indeed. What are your stances on this? You said against.
In general, against. I have to say against. Like, it depends on how it's implemented, but it seems more and more often DLC is a way of, like, siphoning money out of people's pockets. Yeah. Which I'm okay with. If you do a really good job with the siphoning, but a lot of it just seems like cynical money grab as opposed to some sort of extra content for the real fans. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Like it seems like taking advantage of the real fans.
Yeah.
Which I guess it's capitalism. What are you going to do? People are going to figure out how to make more money.
Yeah, it totally is capitalism. And I don't know. It's like day one DLC. That's become a catchphrase among video game people, like day one DLC. You can buy the game and then buy this extra map. Spend more money on this game.
And the thing is, like, it's really disturbing.
That's so scumbag. That's such a scumbag move.
It is.
Yeah.
It really is. But like, I get like with development costs of games going higher and higher and the price remaining fixed, I kind of get where they're trying to come up with different revenue models to make that work.
Sure, but when it's coming from a company like EA, Ubisoft, or Activision, they don't really need that extra money.
Yeah. I noticed, though, a lot of companies, to their credit, like maybe Naughty Dog, they put out that fantastic zombie game, and there's DLC for it, but I finished the game, I loved it, I feel no need to revisit it, and I don't have to, and I'm never going to. I don't need to play extra chapters. I don't need to know anything else about it. I loved it, and it's done. So they made it so that you know, not essential.
Yeah, it's a complete experience on its own, and I actually bought the DLC myself, and I really enjoy the DLC.
Ah, now I'm gonna get it. Oh, I'm gonna go back on it. Ah.
I'm not gonna like try and make you regret, but this is a very specific case because Naughty Dog has never really done DLC before.
Right.
So when it comes to like The Last of Us DLC called Left Behind, I think it was. Mm-hmm. They put forth like a lot of effort to make sure that it was something that was worthwhile, and it came out quite a while after the game was released, so like a lot of people had been already finished with the game, and this would give them a reason to revisit it and play from the perspective of Ellie and get more on her backstory.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really enjoyed it. The writing was top notch. The animation, the experience of it was really great, and I totally recommend it. But again, it's not really a necessary thing because The Last of Us game on its own was perfect.
Okay, so would you say that maybe that's an example of DLC that's actually good? Because, you know,
I mean, there is good DLC out there. It's not all bad. It's not all map packs. It's not all songs for Rock Band or something like that. There are some good
DLC.
Oh,
you know what? That's one example that you brought up, interestingly enough, okay, that I regard as a good example of DLC.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, the Rock Band songs were brilliant. That makes sense to market that as, like, DLC because, you know, the disc can only hold so much, and each song was, like, $2 a pop. That's not terrible.
Right, and then you can choose which songs you like and which songs you don't like, and you don't have to...
Yeah, exactly. Plus, you have the experience of playing it with four people or playing all different four tracks by yourself. So, like, that's got replay value.
They made all the DLC, if I remember correctly, like, transferable from Rock Band 1 to 2 to 3.
Exactly.
So, like, it wasn't like you were going to buy Devo's Whip It four different times in order to play it on...
Yeah. And that was smart DLC. That was really smartly designed on Harmonix's part. So props to them.
Yeah, they did a really good job. Okay, so now I think we're coming to a more nuanced picture of DLC because some examples of the way it's used are really good and some really bad. And it sucks when you love something, like you love a game.
Yeah.
And then the people who make the game or market the game or sell the game do something to make you not like it as much, you know, and you just go, well, I don't want to feel like you're ripping me off. I want to feel like you're my friend.
With the amount of DLC that is released for some games, it feels like they ship an incomplete game.
Right.
And sometimes that's just the case. Most recently, I can think of Assassin's Creed Unity, where the game is just straight up unfinished. And while it wasn't marketed as DLC, it still released 2 gigs patch. They released a 2 gigabyte patch to fix the game that they shipped. It was an unfinished game, and that's just a shame. And that's another topic that we can go into. But DLC, I mean, like, I'm thinking of, like, Assassin's Creed 2. Assassin's Creed 2 had a few DLC packs that were not very long, not very necessary either. They didn't really add much to the game because, like, I think the game was complete. And I don't know, because there's a difference between, like, the necessary yet unnecessary add-ons, like the Left Behind DLC that Last of Us had, and there's like the stuff that more or less quote unquote fills in the blanks, like Assassin's Creed 2 DLC, where it's just like a quick chapter that's only going to last like 15 minutes as opposed to a 2-hour experience that you can get after the fact.
Right.
Yeah. Have you ever played the Lost and the Damned or the Ballad of Gay Tony expansions for Grand Theft Auto 4?
You know what? I did. I played the, I think I played both of those actually.
Yeah, and how were those? Because I haven't.
They're good. I mean, they're like more missions and a plot line that is not as interesting as the main plot line, and missions that are not quite as memorable as the ones that actually made the cut of the game. But it's a lot of content if you want extra missions for that that game.
Yeah.
But it's not the best content, or even, in my opinion, up to the standard. Although The Lost in the Damned was pretty cool. I would get The Lost in the Damned. But, yeah, I mean, that maybe highlights a lot of my ambivalence toward DLC. It's like, you want more content, but it's clear that if the stuff was the best stuff, it probably would have been in the actual game.
Yeah, that comes down to the discretion of the developers, like, what's the best stuff that we can offer towards our consumers, right?
Yeah. Because still DLC would be, like, a sideline, a secondary to the sales of the actual game. So, like, if it were me, I would put all of the top-notch stuff in the game and be like, you know... Although, then there's stuff like what's that game with the cowboys that everybody liked? I'm in my old age.
Red Dead Redemption?
That's the very one. The DLC for Red Dead Redemption, the Undead Nightmare?
Yeah.
That was amazing. Like, maybe an example of DLC that is good.
That did something different.
Yeah, you know, that's what I'm saying.
I like DLC that does something different because, like, while I didn't necessarily enjoy Undead Nightmare, I thought it was kind of, well, I'm just using the slow motion mode again and just shooting zombies in the head. It was saying, like, all right, you've played the game, you've enjoyed the game, let's have a little bit of fun with it and just throw in zombies in the Old West. Why not? So, yeah.
Right. And that's maybe an example of, like, that's just some, like crazy idea that would not have fit into the regular game at all.
Not at
all.
But
it's super awesome and fun and, like worked for some weird reason.
Yeah, they did something similar in the game Sleeping Dogs.
Did they?
United. Yeah. There was Chinese zombies.
Oh, really?
They were all, like, dressed in garb, and they had, like, the little pamphlets on their foreheads, and they would hop around because that's what Chinese zombies do. But yeah, like, you would kung fu fight with zombies and shoot them, and because why not?
Yeah, I played that game for a little bit. I liked it. I didn't play it that much, though. I kind of got bored of it. I don't know why.
I enjoyed the game. It was like Grand Theft Auto, but, like, it was small. It was much smaller.
Yes.
But yeah. What about stuff that, like, sort of, like we're talking about experimental DLC that just kind of, like, does something different. Bioshock Infinite had the Under the Sea, the one where it takes place in Rapture.
Oh, right. Yeah, I've been meaning to play that. I've been meaning to buy that. That's the piece of DLC I've been like, I guess I'll buy that.
I've been wanting to, but it's still priced at around $30.
Is it really?
I think because it's sold in two parts, which is weird, and each part is $15 for a two-hour experience, making the whole thing a four-hour-long $30 experience. Now, we talked about, like, price versus length, but if it isn't that good, and I've heard that it's just somewhat mediocre, it may not be entirely worth it. So I think that comes down to your discretion or patience, depending on how long they decide to, you know, again, drop the price.
How much do you love Bioshock? If you really love Bioshock, you'll buy it. And then you'll also be the one who's the most disappointed. It's like a double-edged sword with this thing.
It totally
DLC.
Is.
Like, if you don't give a shit about Bioshock and you play the DLC, you'll be like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if you're really into it, you'll just be so disappointed. Oh.
Yeah, because you might have, like, some really high expectations, or you might take it with a grain of salt and say, hey, this is something different. I bit the bullet and spent $15 on this. Let's see how it is.
You know? Right. How about this? Let me ask you this question. Can you think of any example, like, some of the worst examples of DLC? Who did it absolutely wrong?
Goodness. I don't really invest in bad DLC. I mean, like, I'm just trying to, like, research it as much as I can. Mm-hmm. I think map packs are okay. I think those are fine.
Yeah, yeah, extra maps. I'm down with that. Sure.
Yeah, overpriced map packs are a bad call. I just really can't think of anything. Nothing comes to mind.
When we decided to do the thing about the show about DLC, I started thinking about, like, what was the worst ones. I go right back to the very beginning. One of the first pieces of DLC ever seen on consoles, was for the Xbox 360 version of Elder Scrolls Oblivion, and it was armor for your horse.
Famous
horse armor.
Which
didn't have any game bearing whatsoever, just made your horse look a little different and cost $2.50. And this was the big thing that they rolled out. Like, here's the DLC, everyone!
Wow.
Yes.
talk about stepping out on the wrong foot.
Or the Saboteur. That's the other example that I came up with. Where the
Saboteur!
Do you remember the DLC with the Saboteur?
No, but that was Pandora or Pandemic Studios' last game. Rest in peace. They made the wonderful yet terrible Star Wars Battlefront games.
The Saboteur was an adult sort of game, so there were many, even though it was set in the 40s, there were many trips to brothels and different houses of ill repute, and the strippers nipples were covered with pasties unless you paid $3.
Oh, that's
right. Like, that's, now that one,
that's shameful.
That it's totally like, who would do that?
Yeah, but I guess mean, like
plenty of people did.
Yeah, I mean,
apparently the servers are shut down now, so you can no longer do that. I'm sorry, Scott. You know, you'll have
Oh no, I guess I'll have to find pictures of breasts on the internet.
They have that now?
That's gonna be difficult.
Wait, on the internet?
Yeah.
Hold on.
It's a thing.
Changes everything.
So to go on the opposite end of the spectrum, best DLC, go.
Best DLC. I like the first piece of DLC for Fallout 3. Or no, the second piece of DLC for Fallout 3.
Was that the pit?
Yes, the pit. That was a really great piece of DLC.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't remember what it cost. I think it was like $7, and it was like a really interesting quest chain that would have fit into perfectly into the game. Like, it was exciting and good, and it gave you some cool stuff at the end of it, and it didn't detract from the experience of the game at all, but it also was totally unnecessary. You didn't need it.
Yeah, totally.
So that was a good example, I think, of really good DLC. How about you? What's your best DLC?
The Shadow Broker. The Lair of the Shadow Broker for Mass Effect 2. Have you played that?
I have not. You'll have to tell me about it.
Okay, so Lair of the Shadow Broker was pretty exciting. In Mass Effect 2, you see Liara, but you don't get to have her join up in your party. However, like if you buy the DLC, you can give her information on the location of the Shadow Broker, and then you can hunt down and kill the Shadow Broker. And the cool thing is, like, the Shadow Broker is, like, this character who's, like, only mentioned in hushed whispers in the first game. And, you know, is just kind of like, oh, who is this mysterious person? Is it even just one person? Some say it's, like, a whole legion of people, like, just gathering and selling and using information to, you know, just run their business and sort of corrupt the entire galaxy. So Liara was going on a hunt for the Shadow Broker to retrieve the corpse of Shepard, because the Shadow Broker was going after Shepard's corpse to turn it over to the collectors and make a fair bit of money and be spared from the Reaper reaping or whatever. But in the DLC, it kind of like changes up the formula, because you kind of play detective, because Liara has an attempt on her life, and so you look after her, you look for her assassin, and then you go into this building and you fight off Shadow Broker agents, and then like there's a bomb, you got to get out of the building, and it explodes, and it's really action and exciting, and then like there's a flying car chase, and then there's a fight with another Spectre, and it's really cool, and then like you get to the Shadow Broker's base, which is a spaceship that is constantly flying in the twilight of one planet that is like having thunderstorms on one side and blizzards on the other. And it was, you fight on the outside of that spaceship, and it's really cool and really exciting. And there's like this whole story, and it's just a really great experience that was totally worth paying the price for that DLC.
I'm sold.
So, yeah.
I'm going to pick that up right away. How about the, did you play the Citadel for Mass Effect 3?
Yeah, I that was the only piece of DLC that I bought, and that is a fanfic gone wild.
Oh yeah? How so? I didn't play that one either.
Oh, it is such a... Alright, so I don't really like Mass Effect 3. I feel like the writing went severely downhill after head writer Drew Karpyshyn left the BioWare team, and so, Mass Effect 3 Citadel was basically a reunion tour of every single character ever. So you could have Rex and Garrus rolling your team again, and like everybody was just on the team and hunting down the main bad guy, who was an evil clone of Commander Shepard. And yeah, I mean, like it doesn't take itself seriously at all,
right,
which is great, because like I totally want to see something in the Mass Effect universe that is somewhat like off the serious beaten path of like, oh, the Reapers are coming and I have to save the galaxy. No, it's just kind of silly, and I kind of enjoy it, but I hate it because it's like, oh, it's so bad, but I kind of love it because like it's so bad.
Yeah, that's another thing about DLC that they can do, is like change the tone up so completely, like Undead
exactly.
Nightmare, also the Citadel,
yeah.
Like, which is one of the reasons that maybe, okay, all right, it's good, I guess. Or maybe I'm, you know what? this podcast maybe is changing my mind a little about DLC. I'm still not going to buy it, but all right, other people can. Yeah, that's cool. Okay, DLC.
Yeah,
cool.
I mean,
whatever.
Do your research. And all things when it comes to video games, just do your research, you know?
But I would rather just go to the game store and just pick something out at random. You ever do that? You ever pick anything out at random?
No.
No, I don't think I have either. I don't think I ever have. Well, you know what? Actually, I did all the time, come to think of it.
Oh, yeah?
Because, not because, well, I didn't buy anything at random, but because when I worked at G4, we had a huge library of everything that was out. So, I would just look at stuff and be like, oh, that one that nobody's talking about, maybe that game's awesome. And, you know, I was always wrong. I was never right. There was never a game that everybody was talking about that, except for one. Oh, my God, there was one game that somebody wrote me an email to tell me that I need to check it out. And they were so passionate in this email that I tracked it down, and it was the game Deadly Premonition. Did you ever play that game?
You know what? I had it for a while, but I never played it.
Deadly Premonition is, seriously, it's the greatest. And it's one of those things that divides people into two camps immediately. Like, there's the people that are like, I don't know what you see in this game or why you like it. And the other people going, I can't believe you don't understand how awesome this game is.
Yeah, I've heard that it's just kind of strange. To me, it seems like the premise for a movie that they would watch on Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Completely, but it's awesome. I mean, it brings it's a nostalgia trip for when games were sort of a little more batshit. Now they're sort of, you know, games, you know, they're smarter. And they're better produced, and the writing's better, and they're tighter, and all this. But I feel like they lose this sort of like complete insanity that can often result in from it being more of a cult thing and less of a mass market thing. That's why Goat Simulator is so fun. Oh my God, my son and I have been playing Goat Simulator. Have you played this Goat Simulator?
No, but I've seen plenty on it. You know what it is.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, that's one of those games that utilizes like silly game physics to just make the game itself. You know,
it's not going to change anybody's life. It's totally silly. It's not, you know, unless you're seven, it's going to amuse you for like maybe an hour. But that hour is amazing.
Yeah.
Exactly. Of course, my kid, he plays Goat Simulator all the time. He's found everything in Goat Simulator. He never gets tired of it. It's like, you don't get tired of just hitting a guy and watching him run away. He's like, no, it's so funny, Dad. I'm like, all right, dude. It's like Three Stooges for kids.
Yeah. And they, see, now Goat Simulator kind of had DLC because when it first released, it was only single player and there wasn't that much to it. It was just kind of like weird ragdoll physics, and you play as a goat.
Right.
And then they released a patch, which included multiplayer, different hats, different skins, different abilities, so that your goat could ride on bicycles. You could have local multiplayer, so they could have like the four people playing. You could fly, I think. I don't know. But like, yeah, a whole bunch of just stuff was added into that patch. And it was released as a patch, a free thing. And not really DLC.
Right.
So, to bring it back to that topic, is that a way to do DLC?
Well, I mean, that's almost a different kind of... That's a different... Like, because that gets into, like...
Yeah.
Like, the other ancillary idea of, like, mods, you know?
Yeah. And it is kind of like a mod thing that they did to it. I mean, it's not like something where you're going to get, like, the Dragonborn DLC for Skyrim with an entirely new continent to explore and new items and stuff like that. It's just small additions, but they're fun additions, like the multiplayer with like tag or capture the flag or something like that. Like it's just something that is fun and, like I said, kind of like mods.
But then a lot of you know, like more and more games these days, it seems, are releasing in pre-finished form with the idea that if you buy the game, you'll be able to download all the stuff as it comes up. And then they kind of back themselves into a corner, because it's not like Minecraft could now say, oh, well, this new update is DLC. You have to buy this one, because I'd be like, no, you said when I bought the thing for $7 before it was finished that I could have everything, and now you have to give it to me.
Yeah, early access games are a real huge gamble.
Yeah, it's true. But when they pay off, it's awesome. Like, because I like playing Kerbal Space Program again with my son. You know, and that's another thing where like we bought it really early, and every time they fix it up, it gets fixed up a little bit.
Yeah, because it's a gamble for both the consumer and for the developer. Because for the consumer, like you're literally buying an unfinished product.
Have you played this Kerbal Space Program?
No.
Sorry to interrupt you. Oh my god, it's good. It's good.
I want to though, because it looks fun. It looks silly.
It's fun, but it's smart too. I mean, like it's funny and silly, but then like once you like you spend a long time just making rockets that blow up in really interesting ways, right?
Yeah.
Like because it's funny, but then eventually you go, wait a minute, I want to actually get to the moon. Like, I don't want to just keep blowing stuff up. So Dex and I spent a really long time last summer perfecting the art of getting to the moon, which we did, and we landed a Kerbal safely on the moon, and we did not plan for returning him to Earth. And then we soon after lost interest in the game. So he still is there on our Kerbal moon, like walking, constantly searching and waiting for us. We tried to launch a few rescue missions, but they were unsuccessful. Many Kerbals died in the in the quest for many more died in just us trying to see how many booster rockets we could put onto one ship.
Yes.
Which we hit the launch button and it would just immediately explode.
Oh, that sounds like fun. I think I'm gonna have to get that game.
Kerbal
now.
Space Program is fantastic, man. You'd love it. It's really fun.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. DLC, baby.
DLC.
So, all right, mods. We started talking about mods, and let's you know what's been going on with mods. Have you been following this thing with Valve and their modding thing?
Well, I know that Valve has allowed it so that people can now start charging for mods, which seems unfair, because after all this time, especially in the case of Team Fortress 2 that has been going on for over 7 years now, and has a strong community based on those mods which are free, to suddenly say, hey, this is going to start costing money now because whoever made it is saying so.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't seem fair, and it seems to just be such an extreme change of pace. I mean, like, they did sort of the same thing when, you know, I paid full price, $20, for Team Fortress 2 game, and then suddenly went free. So, I don't know. I don't support this. I just don't, because anybody can just, you know, make a mod and say, oh, it's only 25 cents or whatever. And, you know, they can completely false advertise and put up pictures of something that is not what it actually is. Because that's when it comes to, like, the Steam Workshop, that's all you're getting.
Yeah, but
like
then Steam has quality control in place, right? And ways of rating things. And I'm sorry, I'm not a PC gamer, so I'm not as familiar with Steam as I should be. But, I mean, there's like, I don't know, like I usually in these kinds of arguments take the side of the people who make the stuff.
Yeah.
Because creative people get, you know, it's a rough thing to do, so
totally.
Anything that, you know.
Totally.
So if those guys spend all that time making mods and they're good enough that people would pay for them.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, there are some mods.
They could give them away for free, right? Like
it's
not like you're being prevented from giving them away for free, so.
Right, right. I mean, there are some really, really intricate mods out there. I think there was this one that's been in progress for about a year or two now for Portal 2.
Uh-huh.
Completely, like, redesigns everything. It takes place in the underground layers of Aperture Science, like, back in the 1970s. And they reskin the Portal gun, like, everything. It plays like Portal, but, like, all the puzzles are different and stuff like that. And, yeah, it looks really impressive. And that I would pay money for, because this guy spent a long time, like him and his team spent a long time making this entirely new experience using the game engine and assets of Portal 2 to make something new and unique and something, that he made. I would totally pay money to support something like that. But if I were to pay money for a hat or something in Half-Life, or not Half-Life, but Team Fortress 2, I'm not sure that I would.
Yeah, but what if it's a really cool hat?
What kind of hat is it?
I'll tell you, maybe a top hat, but made out of leather. I mean, come on. That's pretty cool.
I think they already have those.
Yeah. Oh, do they really?
Yeah.
I saw a lot of those at the Renaissance Fair this weekend, and that's what made me
think.
I was like, hey, I went to the Renaissance Fair, and there were a lot of hats there.
Well, I want to hear all about that. but after we're done here.
Oh, come on, don't you think the audience wants to hear all about my trip to the Renaissance Fair?
Maybe they do.
I didn't dress in costume, but I wish that I had. As soon as I got there, I was like, oh, I should be wearing a costume.
Wait, did you feel underdressed?
You know what? It's not even that. It's that, like, you look around, and at a good have you ever been to a Renaissance Fair?
I have not.
At a good Renaissance Fair, you really do have the illusion that you have somehow traveled to this alternative place, because they take great care with the details, and it's very well done. The only thing that sort of breaks the illusion is the people that are not dressed at all in anything like a Renaissance dress. So I thought to myself, wow, I am one of those people. So I bought a hat.
that's not a hide my... Yeah. I gotta hide my shorts and t-shirt.
Well, because I noticed that, like, in order to maintain the illusion, you don't have to see someone in a full old-timey outfit. But yeah. If they just have a little bit of an old-timey outfit, that's enough for your mind to kind of, like gloss over them somehow. So
okay, all right.
And that is my trip to the Renaissance Fair.
All right. Okay, so, yeah. I don't know. I would love to support the creative community of Valve and Steam and, you know, everyone who is a really talented modder, but I'm just not sure it's within my budget, you know? That's the thing that keeps me... That is the thing that keeps me most from buying more DLC, is I just don't have the money.
That keeps us all from buying a lot of things.
Exactly. So, like, if it's, you know, even if it's something small, like, is it really worth it? And even it, like, that's another thing, is like the purchase of digital items.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Like, we've weird, like I'll think real hard about whether I'm going to spend 99 cents for that app that I want.
Yeah.
But then I'll go and, like, you know, I'll have a $5 coffee. You know, like,
yeah, right?
It's stupid. Like, we're weird about stuff.
Yeah.
Well, there we go, man. Mods, DLC, Renaissance Fairs, and Guillermo del Toro.
Guillermo del Toro.
That's what I call a podcast.
Yeah, that's what I would call a podcast as well. So goodbye, Internet. Sleep well.
See you later, Internet.
Bye.
All right.
And if you like today's podcast, let us know. Send us a tweet at Old Geek Young Geek on Twitter, or send us an email at oldgeekyounggeek@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
I'm back, I'm cool, with Cyrus in a tier. On me, no ghost, no 16-bit like Sega Genesis. RG ball on the board, soundtrack on the track, Gemini on the job, Shelly G on the G, set green for the green free chillin', and I'm back on my thing for the listeners.